Jerusalem, our feet are standing in your gates. Oh, Jerusalem, our hands are raised in praise to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
Welcome to Jerusalem Next. I'm Kimberly Rogers Brown.
Let's review what I reported last week about Trump's official recognition of Israeli sovereignty over Golan. There are many benefits for Israel, particularly Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and the United States, particularly for President Donald Trump. And first, Netanyahu needed Trump's stamp on Golan just before his election to lock up his win. It seems to be working. According to National Review, while polls show that the Blue and White Party and Likud Party are still locked in a tight race for first place in the multi-party election, even if his party wins the most seats in the next Knesset, Gantz's chance of putting together a viable governing coalition appear to be remote. And in the United States, it is likely that American evangelicals will be impressed with all that Trump has done for Israel, i.e., moving the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem, installing a permanent U.S. military base in Israel, rescinding the Iranian nuclear deal, and the addition to this list of recognizing Golan Heights as sovereign Israeli soil, along with presenting the world with what is hoped will be a viable Israel-Palestinian peace deal. Now, this will be a boon for Trump's election. The annexation of Golan also sets up annexation of the entire West Bank, which also opens the door to getting rid of the Palestinian Authority. Even before Donald Trump became president, the Israelis were working on plans to take Golan for Jewish settlements for up to 100,000 Jews. Finance Minister Moshe Kalon endorsed a new plan to rapidly develop the Golan Heights and raise its population from 22,000 to 100,000 Jews within a decade, according to a J Post article on June 6, 2018. But that same statement was made in 2015 in the New York Times. The takeover of Golan is not a new idea, but will have the effect of pushing the native Druze out of Golan, and such a result will be in line with the Jewish objectives of last year's Jewish state bill enactment. Golan is also the spot with Gog's spoil lining the pockets of Trump administration officials, including Jared Kushner. In effect, Golan is a gift that will keep on giving for years to come. The next and perhaps most important aspect of Golan is its strategic military importance. It is the front line in the coming war with Iran, the King of the North. U.S. President Donald Trump's proclamation to recognize Israeli sovereignty over the Golan Heights is part of a larger effort by the White House to open new fronts in efforts to combat Iranian terrorists and terror proxies in the region. A White House official says that to allow the Golan Heights to be controlled by the Syrian and Iranian regimes is to turn a blind eye to the threats emanating from a Syrian regime that engages in atrocities and from Iran and terrorist actors, including Hezbollah, seeking to use the Golan Heights as a launching ground for attacks on Israel. Israel's parliament passed a law in 1981 which extended the law of the Jewish state to the Golan, a territory captured by Israel in the 1967 war. The area of the Golan Heights held by Israel is around 1,200 square kilometers. That's about 500 square miles, according to the Israeli Foreign Ministry. But more important than the size is the strategic topography, which allowed Syrian snipers and artillery to shoot at Israelis from the plateau. They shot at Israeli farmers working in their fields down below prior to the 1967 conflict. The war inside Syria since 2011 created a vacuum which allowed terror groups and the Iranian regime to enter, as well as Russia. So this new status for Golan could not have come at a better time. Iran is on the move again, and Golan may become more militarily active than with Jewish settlers moving in. This report from Debka explains, the removal from Damascus to Aleppo of Iran's IRGC command headquarters will send Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to Moscow on Thursday, April 4th this week, for an urgent meeting with President Vladimir Putin. That's 5 days before Israel's general election to reset their coordination arrangements. Debka files military and intelligence sources report that the Iranians completed the transfer of their commands and military facilities, lock, stock, and barrel, from Damascus to Aleppo in the second half of March. They hope that this move would get them out of range of Israel's serial air and missile raids, calculating that the IAF would be reluctant to risk running into the Russian S-400 and S-300 air defense batteries deployed nearby at the Khmeim Air Base, but they were proved wrong. No sooner had the Iranian command staff moved into its new premises, the Israeli Air Force conducted one of its broadest raids on Iranian targets in Syria. Casualties of dead and injured were heavy, and the devastation extensive. So, according to Debka's sources, that raid was just the opening shot. Israel finished off Damascus as the arena for destroying Iran's military facilities and shifted its campaign to Aleppo. However, the geography makes it incumbent on Israel to now draw up fresh rules of coordination with the Russian forces posted in northern Syria. Did recognizing Golan kill Trump's peace treaty? According to Fortune.com, President Donald Trump was already struggling to rally Arab support for a long-awaited Mideast peace plan that he has dubbed the deal of the century. His latest move in support of Israel may make that plan dead on arrival. By recognizing Israeli sovereignty over the long-disputed Golan Heights, Trump shoved Arab allies that he's counting on back to his peace initiative and into a corner. The Golan decision came after he had already angered much of the Arab world by moving the U.S. Embassy in Israel to Jerusalem and cutting off funding for a United Nations agency helping Palestinian refugees. And I'm going to have quite a bit more on this problem a little bit later. Saudi Arabia and Egypt are unlikely to throw their weight behind the proposal being drawn up by Jared Kushner, who is the president's son-in-law and advisor, as you know, and White House Middle East peace negotiator Jason Greenblatt, according to interviews with key diplomats and analysts in Washington. One diplomat called the initiative, which has yet to be made public, he called it hocus-pocus, and doubted whether Trump, who has raised questions about whether he supports a Palestinian state, cares about a negotiated settlement. Giving the Arabs a gut punch with Golan will not help them to the table, said Paul Sullivan, a Mideast expert at Georgetown University's Center for Security Studies. It shows deep disrespect for the Arabs at large, and it is a huge loss of face. And I can tell you, that losing face is not a pretty sight in the Middle East. As two of America's closest Mideast allies, Egypt and Saudi Arabia, are essential to any viable deal, Trump will get a chance to woo Egypt's leader when President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi visits Washington on April 9th. Now let's talk about Kushner's ties. Kushner traveled to Saudi Arabia in February to discuss his proposal with King Salman and his son, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. Yet the Saudi royals, like officials in other Arab countries, are mindful that their public is staunchly pro-Palestinian, and that any move to normalize ties with Israel risks bolstering opposition and even terrorist groups like Al-Qaeda. To try to cinch support, Kushner has cultivated close ties with Prince Mohammed, Saudi Arabia's de facto leader, since the earliest days of the Trump administration. The crown prince was seen as having both the influence and money to prod the peace process forward, and an alliance with Saudi Arabia was the centerpiece of Trump's Middle East strategy. Yet his reputation as a reformer was largely destroyed by the killing of the Saudi columnist Jamal Khashoggi at the kingdom's consulate in Istanbul last fall. Prince Mohammed is widely suspected to have known about or even ordered the killing, an accusation the Saudi government strongly rejects. Even without the Khashoggi controversy, Trump's repeated actions in favor of Israel were making it harder to back his peace plan. From the Gulf states' position, you cannot keep accepting concessions when there is little to be gained in fungible terms, said Michael Stevens, a researcher for Middle East Studies at the Royal United States Institute, or RUSI, which is located in London. People talk about a shift in the mindset of Gulf leaders, and yes, there is, to some extent, that has already happened. But I cannot imagine that it is the case when the U.S. and Israel are unilaterally changing the rules of the game. The Palestinians see the Golan Declaration as the U.S. rolling out its Middle East peace plan without a formal announcement. Palestinian Foreign Minister Riyad Malki said on Sunday that he hadn't seen Trump's peace plan and was unaware of any Arab country having received a copy. We think there's no need to announce the deal of the century if it's being implemented in steps, and we are now in the last steps of its implementation, Malki told reporters in the Tunisian capital on the sidelines of a meeting of the Arab foreign ministers. The most recent decision to recognize Israeli sovereignty over the Golan Heights was preceded by the American decision to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital, and will be followed by recognition of Israeli sovereignty over parts of the West Bank. Egyptian government officials and officials with the Saudi embassy in Washington didn't respond to a request for comment about their support for the peace proposal. The Trump administration doesn't think the Golan announcement will impact its peace plan, said a senior White House official who asked to not be identified. Condemnation of Trump's Golan declaration last week was swift, encompassing Arab states he has courted, as well as European allies, as I said last week. Saudi Arabia warned it was a violation of international law that would have negative effects on the peace process. The Organization of Islamic Cooperation condemned it as an explicit violation of UN Security Council resolutions. UN ambassadors from France, Germany, Britain, Poland, and Belgium said in a joint statement that they don't recognize Israel's sovereignty over the Golan. The UN Security Council held a meeting last week in which nearly all members rejected Trump's action. In Lebanon, Hassan Nasrallah, the leader of the militant group Hezbollah, said a relatively muted response in the Arab world to Trump's decision to move the embassy encouraged the U.S. to go forward with its Golan policy, and he warned that the West Bank would be next. Trump has said that Israel will have to make concessions in any peace proposal, but there's been little sign of what those might be, and we talked about this a little bit last week, and we know that very little is known about the Kushner-Greenblatt proposal at all, but the plan's unveiling has been repeatedly pushed off. It won't be released until after Israel holds elections on April 9th, a White House official said. I might add that it might be put off again. At a closed UN Security Council meeting earlier this year, Greenblatt faced a barrage of questions from diplomats over whether the plan allows for the creation of a Palestinian state. Greenblatt was non-committal. Now we're going to talk about the AIPAC announcement. We talked about this a little bit last week, but this Fortune.com article recaps what I said last week, which was that Vice President Mike Pence received loud cheers and applause at the recent AIPAC conference. For European allies, however, the U.S. move represents another example of the Trump administration's willingness to make unilateral decisions that jettison international law and undermine decades of diplomatic protocol. The Europeans have not followed Trump in many of his decisions of pulling out of the Iranian nuclear accord, relocating their embassies to Jerusalem, Trump's Golan decision, and most likely they will not stand by him in the deal of the century either. The Europeans say a decision about Israel's capital can only be made in peace talks, not in unilateral decisions such as Trump makes. And at this point in this article, it says that analysts say it's unlikely that Prince Mohammed bin Salman's support will help build broader backing of the peace deal in the Arab world. And at this point, in fact, the Arab League rejected the U.S. recognition of Israeli control over the Golan Heights this week, and they rejected other Trump administration policies seen as unfairly biased toward Israel. This was at their annual summit on Sunday, which showcased unity in one of the few issues that unites them, according to Time magazine. And Arab leaders also reiterated their commitment to resolving the conflict based on the Arab Peace Initiative of 2002, in which they would recognize Israel in return for a full withdrawal from the Golan Heights, as well as East Jerusalem and the West Bank. These are lands that were occupied in the 1967 war. Representatives from the 22-member league, which is also at this point without Syria, Syria was kicked out a few years ago, jointly condemned President Donald Trump's recognition of Israel's annexation of the Golan Heights and his decision last year to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital. In their final statement after the day-long summit, the leaders affirmed that the Golan, which is a strategic plateau, as I said earlier, which was used to shell northern Israel, is Syria's occupied territory. At the opening of the summit, King Salman said Saudi Arabia absolutely rejects any measures undermining Syria's sovereignty over the Golan Heights and supports the creation of a Palestinian state in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip with East Jerusalem as its capital. But he added that Iran's meddling was to blame for instability in the region. One of the few things that have united the Arab League over the last 50 years is the rejection of Israel's occupation of the Golan Heights as well as East Jerusalem and the West Bank. These are territories that the Palestinians want for their future state. The Arab leaders meeting in Tunisia condemned those policies but did not announce any further action. I'm going to take a minute to tell you what all of this support for the Palestinians is all about. They are Hebrews. I have been telling you this since last summer. In the genome study that I put on Beastwatch, and it's still up there, researchers found that the Palestinians are 61% Jewish and then 16% Edomite. Well, we know that not all Hebrews are Jews, but all Jews are Hebrews. So, a lot of those Palestinians have Jewish or tribe of Judah DNA. They have tribe of Benjamin DNA and tribe of Simeon DNA, but they also have tribe of Reuben, tribe of Dan, tribe of Gad, tribe of Issachar, tribe of Zebulun, and so forth. Naphtali, Joseph, you know, Ephraim, Manasseh, so forth. They are physical Hebrews mixed in with other nations that have occupied Israel for the last 2,500 years. Babylon, Persia, Greece, Rome, and Rome, by the way, is Edomite. That's where the Edomite blood comes from. The people who are in favor of the Palestinians are probably Hebrews themselves that have been forcibly converted to Islam. Islam was not a religion until about 1,350 or 60 years ago, almost 1,400 years ago. The people in the Middle East lived in tribes. There were Ishmaelite tribes, Edomite tribes, and of course, Israelite tribes. Even 1400 years ago, after Yeshua had resurrected and ascended to the Father, there were still all of those people all over the Middle East. And a large number of Palestinians have the Hebrew DNA marker. It's not a Jewish DNA marker. It is a Hebrew DNA marker. It's just that the world, the scientists and the doctors and so forth, don't know the difference between a Jew and a Hebrew. They don't know the difference between a Hebrew and an Israelite. For instance, let me tell you what the difference between a Hebrew and an Israelite is. If you are Abraham's child, you are a Hebrew, but you have to be a child of Jacob to be an Israelite. So Abraham had descendants Ishmael and Isaac. Isaac is a Hebrew who gave birth or had two sons, Esau and Jacob, and through which Jacob became Israel. So anyone who does not accept the line of Jacob remains just outside of that line. So you can be a Hebrew and not be an Israelite. See? You can be a Hebrew and not be a Jew, or, you know, someone from the tribe of Judah, Benjamin, Simeon, Levi, or a few of those families that came down from Ephraim and Manasseh. That's the reason why these people are still fighting over this territory. But it goes back even farther than that. It goes back 2,900 years ago to the civil war that happened in Israel between Kings Rehoboam and Jeroboam. You can read about that in 1 Kings chapter 12. And moving forward from that time, that civil war is ongoing. And it's still ongoing, and that's really what is happening here. This is the world's oldest civil war. So now back to the article. It says here, as I said before, but I'm going to repeat myself, the Arab leaders meeting in Tunisia condemned the policies of Trump and Israel, but they did not make any announcements about any further actions that they're going to take. this article says, that is in part because regional powerhouses Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates have cultivated close ties with the Trump administration, viewing it as a key ally against their main rival and everyone else's main rival, Iran. Stay tuned. I'll be right back after these messages. Thank you for listening to Jerusalem Next on Hebrew Nation Radio. Full news coverage with a Hebraic perspective of the headlines fulfilling Bible prophecy. Remember to financially and prayerfully support the ministries that keep you up to date. Send your donation to Hebrew Nation Radio today. While you're at it, please remember Beast Watch News too.
Oh, Jerusalem, our feet are standing in your gates.
Welcome back. Both Saudi Arabia and the UAE face Western pressure over their devastating three-year war with Yemen's Houthi rebels, who are funded by Iran. And Riyadh is still grappling with the fallout from the killing of Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi by the Saudi agents last year. According to ArabNews.com, the Saudi cabinet, which is chaired by King Salman at Al-Azizia Palace in Al-Khobar, on Tuesday reiterated the kingdom's stance on the Palestinian cause, stating that it would remain on top of the kingdom's agenda. But it also reiterated its rejection of any action that would violate Syria's sovereignty over the Golan Heights and the importance of reaching a political solution to the Syrian crisis. So the earlier question was whether or not Trump's deal is dead on arrival because of his hubris in recognizing Golan as under Israeli sovereignty, and will that deliver a DOA peace deal? Well, it certainly does not sound hopeful at this point. However, the scripture is clear that the land will be divided. Joel 3:1 and 3:2 say, "For behold, in those days and at that time." Those are two different ways of saying at the end of days. When I shall bring again the captivity of Judah and Jerusalem, I will also gather all the nations, and I will bring them down into the valley of Jehoshaphat, and will plead with them there for my people and for my heritage Israel, whom they have scattered, and they parted or divided my land. Perhaps Trump is such a deal maker that he can pull a DOA deal out of the ashes and make it fly like a phoenix. Who knows? Now, let's talk about what this is all doing to Jordan and Jordan's treaty with Israel, which is now on shaky ground. Jordan, King Abdullah's rulership is being challenged by the Muslim Brotherhood's intervention. This situation could cause the Israel-Jordan peace treaty to collapse. The Hamas activists who spearheaded radical Muslim Brotherhood opposition to Jordan's King Abdullah were encouraged by Israel's consent to the deal with Gaza's Hamas rulers that was brokered by Egypt last week, and they concluded from Israel's avoidance of a large-scale military operation that their Gazan brothers' terrorist tactics had bested the IDF's military and intelligence capabilities. They are now contemplating borrowing those same tactics to give the already shaky Hashemite throne in Amman a final push. The situation raised alarms in Western circles during King Abdullah's visit to Washington in early March. King Abdullah turned down every Middle East project put before him, especially President Donald Trump's Israel-Palestinian peace plan. King Abdullah told the Trump administration not to count on him for any kind of cooperation in implementing U.S. policies in the region. We're going to find out about that in a little bit, why King Abdullah is now antithetical to the U.S. But on March 29th, when Gaza was on the brink of tipping over into a major clash, the Muslim Brotherhood quietly scored a victory by pushing through the Jordanian parliament for the first time, a motion voiding the natural gas contract signed with Israel by the Jordanian Electric Company. In an attempt to save the deal, the royal court referred the issue to the Jordanian Constitutional Court for a final ruling. The Gazan Hamas long arm has clearly reached the Brotherhood in Jordan and succeeded in inflicting a disastrous blow to the kingdom's economy. Well, this is not the only thing that's inflicting a disastrous blow to the kingdom's economy. King Abdullah has been trying to ward off the extremist threats by distancing Amman from Washington and Jerusalem. He has publicly slammed the Trump administration's policies in the region and taken the lead in the campaign against Israel over Temple Mount and Jerusalem. For many years, King Abdullah counted heavily on military intelligence and economic support to keep his kingdom afloat and stable. But now, when he is more in need of a helping hand than ever before, he is separating himself from his champions. Why? Well, we're going to take a look at that. He's facing two big perils that are becoming uncomfortably acute. One is the deepening economic crisis and the attendant shortages, which have made the population as a whole restive and antagonized the middle class, which was one of the throne's main props. Bedouin tribes, which are another important prop, have turned against the throne and are joining opposition protests against the king. And two, the evolving pact between Iran and two of Jordan's neighbors, Iraq and Syria, is bringing large Iraqi militias under Iran's Revolutionary Guards command to Jordan's back door. Abdullah has no doubt that his throne is seen as a major obstacle in the path of Iran's expansionist drive and is therefore dispensable. As matters stand, he is running out of defenders for his kingdom against this oncoming storm after turning away from Washington and Jerusalem. You'll remember that Daniel 11, starting at verse 40, says that the chief of the children of Ammon will escape the coming Iranian onslaught, the king of the north. Well, this is part of saving the king. He may not realize it at the moment, but he may in the future. Donald Trump has been busy to take care of relations between the U.S. and Jordan, for which a heavy future price could be paid by all. Even if Jordan reneges on its peace deals with the U.S. and Israel, it will still be attacked by Iran and its proxies in the coming King of the North War. King Abdullah has been between a rock and a hard place for decades. The U.S. has recently ended its promised monetary support of the Palestinians under Trump's watch. The Jordanian economy is suffering because of the loss, but so also is King Abdullah's popularity. Rumors are sometimes heard of attempted coups that one never reads about in the news, and to make matters worse, Israel's defense and intelligence apparatuses helps Jordan maintain stability in the kingdom. So he's between needing to keep Israel happy and the U.S. happy and keep his people happy. This is a two-edged sword for Jordan. On one hand, King Abdullah must satisfy the Palestinian displeasure with Israel's East Jerusalem and Temple Mount activities while simultaneously keeping Israel close enough to be an ally, all the while watching Jordan's economy crumble because of the Trump administration's Palestinian policy. This is why Jordan is facing a real existential threat to the royal family's continued rule. And when it comes to the issue of the Palestinian majority in Jordan, the royal family has recently become concerned about the Bedouin sector's growing strength, both as the backbone of the Jordanian military and in the government sector, where the Bedouin fill many senior positions in administration and public security. There's been a major shift in public sentiment that has also occurred since the Arab Spring began in 2010. Middle East expert Pinchas Inbari, a senior research fellow at the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs, who has spent years studying changes in Jordan, argues that even though the events of the Arab Spring did not affect Jordan like they did its neighbors, the kingdom has clearly not avoided Islamic State gaining foothold within its borders. This has happened mostly at the kingdom's periphery, and when the Islamic Caliphate was at its height, the Bedouin religious leadership openly declared its loyalty to ISIS and called for the ouster of the royal family. And then there is the religious factor. The inherent tension between the Bedouin and the Palestinians in Jordan is complicated by the Muslim Brotherhood movement in Jordan, which is comprised mainly of Palestinians. The Jordanian arm of the Muslim Brotherhood, which is the movement that oversees Hamas, is walking a tightrope and being careful not to put Palestinians in top roles over Jordan's Bedouin sector. Hamas seems to be in a make-or-break position in Jordan now because of secret support from the Muslim Brotherhood during the Arab Spring. The Muslim Brotherhood protected Jordan while allowing other Middle East countries such as Egypt and Libya to topple. And now the Bedouin tribes in the Jordan periphery, who identify with the Salafi Wahhabi stream of Sunni Islam under the influence of the Islamic State Caliphate, have begun to call for ousting the royal family to replace it with a Salafi Wahhabi religious regime. The Muslim Brotherhood stands against the Salafi Wahhabi in Jordan alongside the royal family at the moment, which allows it to express harsh criticism of the peace treaty between Jordan and Israel and call for it to be canceled. But this pressures King Abdullah, who still requires Israel's and the U.S. militaries too. You see, he needs Israel and the U.S. So the king is learning that it is not possible to have both the Muslim Brotherhood and the Israel-U.S. alliance. Senior Jordanian intelligence officials have even told Israel Hayom that even though the calls from some of the Bedouin tribes against the royal family are not strong enough to threaten the king's rule, they are still a worrying development that could become a threat to the kingdom's stability. Trump's foreign policies, aside from ending funding for Jordan's Palestinian population, have had devastating effect in Jordan, but without the added benefit of attention that Trump pays to Israel. So Iran and its proxies are bearing down harder on Jordan borders than on Israel. And now comes Trump's peace plan for Israel and the Palestinians and what Amman perceives as the Judaization of Temple Mount and a change to the status quo at the site. The Bedouins may not be a force to topple the king by themselves, but Trump's meddling in Jerusalem could strengthen the Bedouin position. The reason is because the special status Israel conferred on the Jordanian kingdom allowing it to oversee Islamic holy sites on the Temple Mount, is the main source of the Jordan royal family's legitimacy. Any change to the status quo on Temple Mount will equal a change in Jordan's status that will lead to the king and his family being accused of having betrayed their roles as guardians of the Islamic holy places in Jerusalem. They will lose their legitimacy to rule and could even lose the kingdom itself. Various reports claim that the U.S. President Donald Trump's deal of the century will probably include the establishment of a pan-Arab Islamic council led by Saudi Arabia to manage the local waqf, which will replace the role of Jordan in overseeing Temple Mount. For the Jordanian royal family, that means it would be booted out of its exclusive role at the holy site. So Jordan continues walking a narrow line, trying to maintain stability and ensure the continued existence of the kingdom. And protests are held often in Jordan. The more things people have to protest, the harder it is to maintain equanimity in the kingdom. This past week, protests were held in Amman over President Trump's Golan recognition. 3,000 demonstrators protested through the streets of Amman, holding anti-Israel signs and chanting slogans in support of Hamas and against Israeli control of East Jerusalem, the hoped-for Palestinian capital. The march was organized by the Muslim Brotherhood. In other words, the Muslim Brotherhood comports itself as a kingmaker organization, not realizing the disaster that will be brought to the Middle East if it destabilizes Jordan. And in recent weeks, I have speculated that Jared Kushner may offer Hamas its own state in order to make the deal seem that much sweeter once Hamas rockets stop flying, at least temporarily, since Hamas can never keep a peace deal. An additional situation may be influencing this if it happens this way. It may be that Kushner will use handing over Gaza to Hamas as its own Palestinian state to quell the uprisings against King Abdullah in Jordan, in what could turn out to be another step in the land for peace mentality. Kushner may try to bribe the Jordanians into not overthrowing King Abdullah. There better be more economic entitlements for Jordan if the Trump administration expects this ploy to work. Now let's take a look at the Bolsonaro-Netanyahu connection. The Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro prayed at the Western Wall with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Monday during his 3-day trip to Israel. This was the first time a sitting Brazilian president joined Israeli leaders to visit the holiest site in Judaism. The goal of Bolsonaro's trip is to bring Israel and Brazil together through economic, technological, and security partnerships. The two countries will begin conducting joint scientific and technological research and will collaborate on public security and defense services. On Sunday, Bolsonaro acknowledged the Jewish people's deep ties to Jerusalem and announced that he will open a Brazilian trade mission in the Holy City. Now, many see the announcement as a small step towards Bolsonaro's larger goal of moving the Brazilian embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem by the end of his term in 2022. Brazilian media reports that Bolsonaro is facing resistance within his own government, and some leaders believe that it will strain Brazil's relations with Palestinians and the Arab world. But there is more to this than meets the eye. The Kabod cabal, which includes Netanyahu, Trump, Putin, the Sanhedrin, and Freemasons everywhere on earth have an agenda to bring the world under Judaism or Noahide domination. Judaism, of course, is for those who are already or who want to be Jews. This will be a first class status. And Noahide domination is for those who reject the Jewish man Messiah in favor of Yeshua, the Son of God, and might I say, in favor of keeping the Sabbath. But there is a third option, and that is called Freemasonry. Now, Freemasonry permeates all religions on earth, including Islam and Christianity, but it is a secular form of Judaism, a Judaism option rather than a religious Judaism option. Let me repeat that. Freemasonry is a secular Judaism option rather than a religious Judaism option. Now, what does this have to do with Brazil and President Bolsonaro? Well, there are a lot of Jews in Brazil, and the Israeli Sanhedrin has the agenda of bringing home to Israel all Judaism-practicing Jews. But not just these. The Sanhedrin, the Israeli government, and the Chabad Cabal are trying to gather Jews of all kinds, some who are secular, all the way to those who don't know they are of Jewish descent. Netanyahu and Bolsonaro frequently are seen or spoken of together in the news in the Cabal's attempt to demonstrate the close ties of the Jews in Israel to those in Brazil. Moving the Brazilian embassy to Jerusalem would simply follow suit with Washington to set the tone for other nations with large Jewish populations. But the coup de grace with Bolsonaro is that he is, or claims to be, a devout Christian, and obviously one who does not know the difference between the coming Jewish man Messiah, who is also an Antichrist, and Jesus, whom he worships at church. Thus, Brazil's population is now subject to Judaism, Noahidism, or Freemasonry, and people will be made to choose between these in an eternal oath. The push to bring back Jews to Israel has become an election issue. The Israeli government continues to increase its call to Jews living outside Israel, and the political parties are making it an election issue. This week's J Post article says the government needs to push for more Jews to immigrate to Israel from the U.S. and other Western countries by funding Jewish education and Hebrew lessons in their communities, according to Yisrael Beiteinu, member of Knesset, or MK, Oded Forer, said this week. Forer, who is number two on Yisrael Beiteinu's list, and who is also a former director general of the Immigration Absorption Ministry, described his plan, which comes in conjunction with the party's focus on Aliyah in light of its voter base of Israelis from the former Soviet Union. The Israeli government has to set a goal for there to be 10 million Jews in Israel in the next 10 to 15 years, and to reach it, we need massive aliyah from Western countries. We need to bring the number of olim up from 30,000 a year to 60 or 70,000 or even 100,000, Ferrer told the Jerusalem Post. For once, we have to work to encourage aliyah from those countries through Jewish education. The key to his plan is to sponsor Jewish education abroad, with an emphasis on Hebrew lessons, because learning Hebrew will strengthen their connection to Israel. And in addition, Ferrer said that those who learn Hebrew and Israel's history will be less subject to manipulation by false information about Israel, and they would have an easier time acclimating once they immigrated to Israel. The audio for this broadcast is too long for this station's format. Please click over to BeastWatchNews.com to continue listening and to read while you listen. Remember, Jerusalem is our next destination. Shabbat Shalom.